The return of our tech team. What technology is confounding you right now? According to the Smart Audio Report, 1 in 6 American households now has a smart speaker, you know, an Amazon Echo or Google Home. The same report says the adoption rate of smart speakers over the last 3 years now outpaces that of smartphones and tablets. Do you have one? Did you know Apple's new smart speaker is about to be released? Do you care? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our favorite tech gurus return to talk smart speakers, Bitcoin, Intel chip problems, and more. And something special today. We get to give away an Amazon Echo Dot. To enter, email us a creative command for a smart speaker. I don't know, maybe something like, "Hey, smart speaker, play Main Calling." We'll randomly select a winner from entries received by 9 p.m. this evening. Main Calling is next, but first this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Main Calling. Did you happen to receive a new computer or techie device over the holidays? Are you struggling to get the most out of it? Well, if so, you are in luck. Our tech experts are here to answer your gadget questions and talk to us about the latest in the world of technology. In the studio with me, Janet McKenney, Director of Library Development for the Maine State Library, Andrew Rosenstein, the owner of Techport, and Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have for our tech team? Are you in the market for a smart speaker or something else? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Main Calling, or post to our Main Calling Facebook page. And speaking of smart speakers, did you know that you can now easily access Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical with a single command on Alexa-powered devices such as the Amazon Echo or Dot and the Google Home? Well, you can. And that has got us thinking about other commands that might be helpful for Maine Public listeners and viewers. So given today's Maine Calling topic, we thought that we would ask you which commands you would like to see. What do you want to be able to ask Alexa having to do with Maine Public or anything else? Email your idea or ideas to talk@mainpublic.org. And then this evening at 9 o'clock, we're going to randomly pick one of the entries, and that person will receive a new Amazon Echo Dot. The first time Main Calling has had a giveaway, it's when you guys are on the air, and it's an Amazon Echo Dot. Welcome, everybody. So I know that I like to start the program asking what you're really excited about these days, and I'll start with you, Jared. What new gadget do you have, what you hope to have? What are you paying attention to?
You know me. I always love home stuff. The holidays came, and I did get a new Ring. A lot of people have heard of the Ring products. There's like the doorbell that you can put and see from your phone and things like that. And they have a new model out, which is a camera and a spotlight built into one.
Cool.
I'm feeling really old these days because I'm really excited about my new spotlight.
I think it sounds cool.
But it's, you know, it's just part of, you know, home security and automation. I've been talking about it here for years, but it's really exciting and the things coming out, things that are wireless, just opening and expanding possibilities for people. So that's been one of the fun new gadgets that I've been playing with. And
Janet, what are you excited about?
I got a RoboVac, a Eufy RoboVac, kind of like a Roomba. And so I'm in love with this new little robotic vacuum, and we call him Dobby. The house elf, and kind of, you know, put him in a room and block it off and come back 30 minutes later and it's all good. And so I did some research because we have a cat, and this one worked with pet hair, reviewed the best of most. So didn't get the Roomba, but got the Eufy RoboVac.
How do you spell Eufy?
E-U-F-Y.
And does it work well?
I think so. I would give it a good solid A-.
Oh, that is pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay, Andrew, what about you?
Well, I've been waiting a long time to buy home speakers, and I've had my sights set on HomePod, the Apple product. It's a small unit with 6 speakers and an integrated microphone, and Siri pops up. I haven't done much with Amazon speaker products. I just for some reason, Alexa and I just don't get along with her.
Siri would be
closer.
Jealous.
Exactly. Right? I just feel like I have something special with Siri.
Confessionals on the Main Colleague Tech Show.
So I'm waiting for HomePod.
So there was a big announcement today.
That's right.
It's going to be pre-orders this Friday and out February 9th.
Yes, and the reason I like that over some of the other products out there, many of them have caught up sonically with speakers you really want to listen to, but up to now, I haven't been that impressed with the sound, and HomePod offers the first opportunity for real, you know, what you used to call audiophile sound.
Somebody yeah, not cheap, though.
They're not cheap, no.
And the Amazon Echo Dot is really inexpensive in comparison, right?
It is.
Yes,
definitely.
But the speakers are...
To me, it's like AM radio versus, a hi-fi system.
Okay, so there are three things I wanted to talk about this hour for sure, on top of everything else I know you're going to blow my mind with. And the first is the smart speakers. The second, Bitcoin. Read an interesting New York Times article about how much electricity it takes to mine a Bitcoin. One of those things, Jared, I think I can't think about too hard or my brain starts to hurt. So Bitcoin is virtual money. There are other kinds of virtual money.
Mm-hmm.
And people now not only purchase products with it, but also there's a market and it's they buy and sell it and invest in it.
Sure. Absolutely. Is that a question?
I'm asking you to explain. I'm saying explain further.
Well, Bitcoin, I mean, since we last met in the beginning of December and there was the big, Bitcoin, people had heard Bitcoin and then all of a sudden there's Bitcoin's going to cross 10,000. You know, one Bitcoin is worth $10,000 in its equivalency to U.S. dollars. And then it went past 10,000, and then it skyrocketed to up to 20,000. When we started the show today, it's back down to around 12. So it's a holiday.
$12,000 or $12?
$12,000.
Okay.
Oh, $12. We'd be having a different conversation.
Okay.
So it's highly volatile. It's a new market, and Bitcoin is kind of the Pepsi and Coke name. It's the name that people recognize, the big boy of essentially just think of cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrency essentially just being different forms of paying for goods and services.
But there's no Federal Reserve Bank backing up Bitcoin.
No. Do you trust the Federal Reserve Bank? Because I don't. I'm in a state here that I am by far, I am not an expert in this at this point. I am a hobbyist. I have a neighbor who started chatting me up in the summertime and telling me about what he was doing, and I've invested in this. And I started researching and reading and learning. And, at the base core of it is a new technology out called blockchain. And what you need to understand is just think of a ledger. Everyone has a checkbook. Money comes in, money comes out. You have a ledger. Well, our ledgers in this world are centralized. The bank, if Bank of America is your bank, they own and operate the ledger. And we trust them that they're doing it correctly. Blockchain technology is now taking that centralized, essentially checks and balances of a ledger out of a centralized company or entity and putting it across thousands and thousands of computers across the world. Every Bitcoin transaction, to use Bitcoin as an example, is public. You could go onto a website right now and watch transaction after transaction after transaction happen. And what that does and why people find Bitcoin and different currencies appealing now is because they can actually trust it. You know for a fact that in time there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoins created. Again, just using this as an example, as opposed to how many dollars.
Wait, how do you know that?
Because it's when they created the system, when they created the program that creates Bitcoins, it was capped mathematically at 21 million.
And who is they?
Great question. We have no idea who made Bitcoin. Some people say it's aliens. Some people say it's the CIA. Some people say it's Elon Musk. It could have been me for all you know. I probably wouldn't be sitting here if it was. I'd be on a beach. But we don't really know technically. There's a moniker, a Japanese name named Satoshi, and that's the moniker used by whoever created this system. And then just put it out onto the internet. And then the trustworthiness and convenience And I know it's a big concept, but that's what it took me to figure out, because you basically had to study money. And if you really think about just people and money, at some point in mankind, someone looked at gold and decided this is pretty and soft and pliable and I find value in it. And, oh, Andrew, if I give him some gold, will give me back some potatoes. You know, people started to build value in things. And that's what happened once this was put out there. Eventually, the very first Bitcoin transaction on the ledger was for 10,000 Bitcoins. Somebody bought two pizzas. Just for reference, each Bitcoin is worth $12,000
right.
when we
so
started this show.
So you could buy a lot of pizzas
now.
So
somebody in their very first Bitcoin transaction spent about $120 million in equivalent value, if I did that quick math right, for two pizzas. So that system has now been put out onto the world. And over the last 7 years, it started around 2011. It was kind of an answer to the crash we had. You know, we had a major economic crash and still no one's really, quote unquote, held responsible for that. And you don't really know how much money's out there. We don't really, I mean, what do you trust in the dollars in our pocket? You trust essentially the government and you trust people. Cryptocurrencies and the blockchain technology are taking that trust and essentially putting it into the system, into something that's verifiable. Blockchain technology, in my opinion, will change a lot, not just money. There's a lot of supply chain, for example. Companies, anyone watching the Patriots game the other night saw that there was an IBM commercial for blockchain technology. Right now, if you go to your local grocery store, they say this is farm-raised fish. How about a technology that actually allows from where that was caught to the processing, to the shipping, to your grocery store, would actually give you as the consumer the verifiable information of the supply chain of your food or of your medicine, things like that. So it's a big concept. I always tell people it's a lot to digest. Go on YouTube, you know, watch videos about a blockchain, just the basic technology, kind of wrap your head around that and how it works. And then start to look at the different, you know, essentially cryptocurrencies. And it's not the greatest name. I look at it as find a technology and a company that's solving a problem. And their technology, essentially, their ecosphere essentially has a token or a coin. And as people use it, it gets value. The example I like to use for folks today in real world life is people that play Xbox or parents that have kids that play Xbox. You don't go into Xbox's system and purchase a game with dollars. You purchase with Xbox tokens. You essentially found that I will trade my U.S. dollar to the Microsoft Corporation for this token. You've put value into it. And that's the path of how now different companies are coming out using blockchain as their basis to create different technologies to solve problems. There is a lot of stuff out there that's just complete garbage. There's a lot of scam coins out there. You really, like with anything, should research and look and learn. And especially if you invest in something, your money, be sure that it's something you could completely lose. But a lot of people think that, you know, some people say Bitcoin will be worth $0 in a couple of years. Some people say in 20 it'll be worth $1 million. You just don't know. But to me, I find it exciting and kind of looking back at the beginning of the internet 20 years ago, looking at something that really has an opportunity to change how we do a lot of things. And Bitcoin is basically how it's all personified these days. It's the big name people know, but there sure is. There's a lot more to it.
Andrew, do you think cryptocurrency makes banks obsolete someday?
Well, cleverly, the banks are moving into their own types of cryptocurrency. I think that they see what's going on. The idea that you can create a currency that bypasses banks and becomes just what peer-to-peer transactions were back in the days when we traded music, which was against all, you know, copyright law. But this, fortunately, is presents as an idea that levels out banking, and we don't have to be subjected to a central reserve. So the idea that 21 million Bitcoins have been created and capped, it would be very difficult to change that cap. So we have something that's a finite resource that has value now suddenly that's growing. So I think people are very excited about the possibilities, and not only with the idea of the new types of encryption that we're seeing, this blockchain encryption, the way that the same way that we saw the early email protocols that we all used to use, like POP and IMAP and SMTP, those kinds of things were open source, developed by developers and not owned by a corporation. And I think that's what really excites a lot of people about Bitcoin, is that there's no way that Microsoft can suddenly buy it and take over the operations. It's a true people's currency.
Janet, have you used it?
No. My kids both own some Bitcoin, not enough that they're like gazillionaires or anything like that. But they live in San Francisco, Silicon Valley, work for startups. So more than anything, I had to read about it and learn a little bit more. I think Jared did a great job of explaining it. I looked at the blockchain technology when it first came out, and I'm really interested in how they put that together. And it's almost like, we talk about crowdsourcing, but this is almost kind of like crowd management and oversight, that it's on so many different servers all over the earth, that there's where that trust comes in, because, they all have to line up because how the system was written. So I posted on the Facebook page something from a great place that does videos called Common Craft, and they do great tech education videos, and they have one on blockchain that makes it really easy.
Oh, thank you. Did that on the Main Calling Facebook page?
Yes, I did.
Oh, thanks for doing that, Janet.
Yeah.
And really quickly before we go to a break, the latest on the Intel chip flaw. Andrew, this is, what is it today? The 24th, so 3 weeks old, this story. Mm-hmm. What do we know today? Have we seen any impact? At first, it became apparent that there was a flaw in these chips that run most of the computers in the world, but then what?
Well, this is where I think we're at an exciting new venture because of the way that blockchain encryption works that we were talking about with Bitcoin, and the way that our security measures have worked, encryption on computers. We've got a lot to learn about personal encryption. And this is kind of a revolutionary idea. When there's a security vulnerability in a chip, we rely on software to try to protect ourselves. But we really need to develop better systems, better kinds of encryption. And the idea that I don't think we've mentioned exactly how blockchain encryption works, but it's based on a mathematical formula, and computers that are linked have to solve the math problem, essentially. And once they do, then the encryption is created, and all the computers sign off on it. So we're learning so much from that type of security in one avenue that I think that we're going to see a lot of melding to hardware and software based on those kinds of new developments.
All right. Either of you have anything to add about the Intel chip before we go to a break? Anything that
I just updated all my software and crossed my fingers.
Yeah,
that's all you can do.
Okay.
Point.
Well, we will go to a break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Main Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Main Calling possible, as does Stillwater Environmental Engineering, providing environmental engineering and compliance assistance. StillwaterENV.com.
A lot of people first heard about Waco, Texas, 25 years ago, when a standoff between federal agents and a fringe religious group turned deadly.
David's religious philosophy was that the end times are coming and the forces of evil will come against us. And in essence, the ATF raid validated that prophecy.
A conversation with two men who were there this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening here on Maine Public Radio. Tonight at 8 o'clock on Maine Public Television, a new program, We'll Meet Again. Tonight, it's Children of World War II. We'll Meet Again follows the dramatic reunions of people separated by World War II. A Japanese-American woman sent to an internment camp hopes to find a childhood friend and a survivor from a Jewish ghetto searches for the child of the couple who befriended him. Then at 9 o'clock, Frontline, which spends 2 years chronicling the journey and experiences of refugees seeking new homes in Europe.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, answers to your tech questions in our studio. Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology. Janet McKenney, director of library development for the Maine State Library. And Andrew Rosenstein, owner of Techport. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. And don't forget, we are giving away an Amazon Echo Dot tonight at 9 for Maine Calling listeners. All you have to do is email us, talk@mainepublic.org, with a suggestion for a command for your smart speaker. So you guys have any ideas for commands that haven't been invented yet?
Turn off.
Oh my goodness. Okay, we'll start with Arthur, who's calling from Alton, New Hampshire. Hi, Arthur, go ahead.
Hi, I have a question. Since I cut the cord a couple of years ago, I get most of my screen time through YouTube. I like mostly documentary, informative type videos. I noticed some of the best ones, the series Modern Marvels, and some of the Nova episodes are so badly compressed that the video is almost unwatchable. You can see the pixelation really bad, but that counts maybe 20% of the YouTube video. The other 80% is fine, 720p or 820p. And I wonder if there's anything I can do on my end to regain some of that lost video quality.
Okay. Any ideas from our team?
Well, I mean, I just look at your internet connection, honestly, and what quality you're trying to do. I mean, technically, until net neutrality and everything is completely thrown out the window, technically everything should be coming delivered from YouTube, no matter what video, essentially at the same bandwidth. So sometimes if I have issues with pixelation or something like that, the first thing I'm going to look at is my, you know, modem, router, reset them, all that stuff like that, and look at the connection you have coming in. And if you are trying to play something on the higher end of that video and find that consistently, like the 4Ks or the HD feeds, you know, are where you're having issue, then you just may have an issue. You said New Hampshire, don't know where, but
Alton.
So we know sometimes as we get off the beaten path a little bit, I don't know exactly where Alton is, but especially in our rural areas, you don't always get the best.
And there's a way to
connection.
Test your speed, right?
Yep. I use Speakeasy. There's a lot of different websites, but
Speed test.
And I've said this before, but people don't tend to do a speed test because you do pay your internet service provider for certain up and down speeds. You know, you are actually paying for a package, and it is good for consumers to learn how to check their speed. And every once in a while, if you're having an issue, actually check that speed. Try and check it direct from the modem by being directly plugged to the modem, not your router, so you get a true test of what they're delivering you. But we're all paying a pretty penny every month. It's good to verify that you're actually getting what you pay for, in my opinion.
Thanks for your question, Arthur. Good luck to you. We'll go to Green and Lou. Hi, Lou. Go ahead.
I'm nowhere near as technically advanced as some of the conversation, but thanks for taking my call. I bought a refurbished 6S iPhone from Apple, which is still on warranty. It's my first smartphone, so I don't have anything to compare it with. How can I tell if my battery is one of those that's being compromised with the Apple situation?
Well, there are a list of serial numbers that you can go ahead and take a look at Apple.com and search for your particular phone and see if your serial number has been included. But generally, all 6S phones have been included in the replacement battery program that Apple has. But that program has been really overwhelmed. So you may find it difficult to get a replacement battery until March, but that's
okay. But I believe it goes all year.
It does go all year, yes.
And $29 for an Apple battery in a 6 or 6S is a very good deal. So I think like you said, all 6 or 6S's are going to qualify.
So would you say if you have a 6 or 6S, just go ahead and get your battery replaced?
Are you calling my store? Because we are really overwhelmed. through the course of the year, I mean, the problem with the batteries are essentially everyone got up in arms because Apple, essentially, people call it throttling or controlling the speed of your phone. But essentially, as your battery gets depleted, to keep your phone running at a good pace, they kind of made some changes in the software to essentially give you a better user experience. That being said, people took that as you purposefully slowed down my phone. I believe, Andrew, I don't know if it's the new iOS updates it's supposed to come out with a feature where consumers can actually turn that on or off proactively. And the idea being that if you do let your phone just run at that kind of full speed, you're just going to deteriorate or not have as solid battery life as you would if you kind of slowed it down a little bit. But that should be, in my opinion, each consumer's decision, what they want to do with their own phone.
Janet, you were waving your phone.
Yeah, I have a 6 and I've been like procrastinating. Do I get the 8? Do I get the 10? Because, you know, for me, it's time to get a new one. And I've noticed some degradation, you know, so I may just get a new battery in this. I'm going to get an 8 or a 10 when I can, you know, like actually hold both of them in my hand and decide which one fits best. But so it'd be interesting to just, you know, put a new battery in my 6 and see if I notice, you know, any kind of change.
My teenage daughter has taught me to put my phone on low power mode.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's helpful when it gets low or when
Automatically for me.
Because it gets low so often. Oh, my gosh. Lou, thanks for your question. We'll go to Chris, who's calling from Georgetown. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for this program. It's always my favorite. I was a former technology consultant, technology type, too. My question is this. How would I know, or would anybody know, if Alexa or an Echo or Echo Dot had been hacked?
No idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
Don't know.
Not a clue.
Someday it will happen.
Yeah.
I suspect.
They say there was an article out yesterday I was reading about concern essentially over the government, like the CIA. You know, they have a program for voice recognition. You know, we've all seen in the movies where they scan the photos and your facial ID and find the guy in the train station. Well, they can also listen for voices. And now one of the concerns are, well, now everybody's essentially put a microphone in their house that's on all the time. Would the government be able to use that to essentially now be able to track somebody even by their voice? And it's creepy. We said it for years, but it's convenient.
Chris,
creepy but convenient.
You know, it's funny. Chris David also sent in an email, and that's exactly the word he uses. He said, is there anything creepier than a smart speaker constantly surveilling your conversations? It listens to your every word for commands, but any device can be hacked and controlled by online entities. Smart home security is just as bad or worse. Your cameras, sensors, and now even your lights and locks can be controlled remotely. Home insecurity is more accurate. Pollyanna should not be in charge of our security or any technology that affects it.
Right. There are some best practices. Go ahead.
Yeah, to mention, too, that Amazon and Apple and Google as well, they're companies that if you can trust a corporation with secure information, they don't want anybody to hack in either. So that you have security that is the best that exists. So what I'm more worried about are off-market devices that don't have much security. So I think be careful what you buy.
The random Chinese Amazon, eBay, no-name special. Also, when you're at home, always, when something comes out of the box, you know, the biggest way these things get hacked, the biggest way where some weirdo's looking at your baby cam is because you didn't change the admin passwords out of the box. These things come, a lot of them, with general admin password. Same thing with your router. So change your, you know, always make sure you change your router passwords, not just your wireless, but your actually admin to your router. Change that to something that's not
admin.
Yeah, not admin, not admin password, not the static thing that came out of the box. There's also ways that people can look online. There's recommendations for essentially separating your home network from your internet traffic and your smart devices and to keep them separate so that you have a better chance. But the person's right. I mean, we just don't know. And it is kind of creepy and there is someone listening, but...
But you're doing it anyway.
Well, yes, because I can just not have to get off the couch and turn off the lights just by moving my mouth. So I'm lazy, and that's what they count on, and that's why they're selling millions and millions of these devices. But it's Star
Trek. I think
Trek.
If someone were surveilling my phone conversations in my home, they might be really bored.
But it's funny because it's not 1984 because it's not even like the government or people are spying. We're clicking on our phone and telling everyone where we are. We're checking in. We're bringing these devices into our home. Nobody has to spy on us proactively. We are all buying the tools to essentially track ourselves. So I always tell folks, if you don't want to be a part of it, you know, if you're worried about something being on the internet, don't put it on your computer. If anything touches the internet, just assume it's out there. And if you don't, then don't sign up. It's that simple.
Chris, thanks so much for this strain of the conversation. Really interesting. Andre, at Main Calling, if you are concerned about internet website speed, go to OpenDNS. Mm-hmm. Do the IP address update to your router to prevent slow internet speed. So OpenDNS, and where do you find your IP address?
I go to whatismyip.com.
Yes. Yeah.
Really?
You can type it right in.
Wow.
It's the fastest way. There's some other ways, but
it's
pretty straightforward.
Okay. We're going to go to Mark, who's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. The discussion on cryptocurrency, I think, was a bit too blasé or optimistic because my what little understanding I have is that it's actually all digital. So if you think about a national emergency where perhaps somebody sets off a nuclear weapon high in the atmosphere to generate an electromagnetic pulse and knocks out the entire country's or a large swath electrical grid with no electricity, there's no cryptocurrency.
Sure, all sorts of reasons the electrical grid could get knocked out. It doesn't have to be a nuclear blast. It could be a solar flare. It could be some sort of attack. And cryptocurrency wouldn't be our only problem, would it?
No. How would you get your bank out of a Bank of America?
Yeah, ATM wouldn't work.
You're going to have the same issues. And I agree with what you're saying, but there's also arguments to be made that same national attack would actually drive people away from government-backed money into a cryptocurrency. Point in case right now, think about South Korea. 40% of the cryptocurrency transactions in the world go on in South Korea. Koreans and the Japanese love this. They're eating it up. They are often ahead of technology, and they love it. What's going on in South Korea? They've got their friends to the north. Who knows what could happen there? And there's analysis on what would happen to the market, as example. Say if South Korea was attacked, and some people would also hypothesize that actually as people would flee their country or areas, they would actually move out of a government-backed money into a more pliable cryptocurrency. Because, again, those computers, if we had an attack here in the United States, the computers that hold your ledger and hold the records of what you own are actually worldwide.
Right.
Unlike our banks and our institutions, which are centralized in central places. So absolutely right. That was a question I had. But the response I got back is, well, how are you getting your money out of the ATM if there's no power? So
yeah,
it's a valid point, and there is no right or wrong. I may sound optimistic because I think it's exciting, but I could also, you know, cut that knife with it could be a total flop and get killed by governments or banks. You just never know what's going to happen. But
well, Mark, thanks so much for your thoughts and so much to think about. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Let's see. I'm going to go to James' email. I have a Kindle Paperwhite and cannot download ebooks from the Maine Library. I was able to download until the Maine Library changed their system. Will you be changing so that those of us with the Kindle Paperwhite can use the library? Janet.
Yeah, currently, I mean, this is a really big issue. But, you know, it's more... Right now, it's the changing of the technology. It's what people are using with mobile and apps. And so we just studied the trend. And, you know, the intent was not to block out those people with Kindle Paperwhites. I was one of those people as well. I left my Kindle Paperwhite on a plane and was not able to recover it. So my replacement was an iPad mini. So I'm reading on the iPad mini and using the Cloud Library app. But, you know, it is tough. The other big vendor did make an agreement with Amazon. And so really a lot has to do with the agreement between the vendor and Amazon and having them work something out. So the best way forward with the Kindle Paperwhite is to reach out to Amazon and ask them to work with Cloud Library. And we have done that. And hopefully going forward, you know, changes will come.
Well, we do have to take another quick break. Before we do so, a word about tomorrow's program. We are going to be discussing the Dark Skies Movement here in Maine. If you have questions or comments, go ahead and email them to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do New England Cancer Specialists, 50 years of working toward better outcomes for Maine patients. Learn more at newenglandcancerspecialist.org. And University of Maine at Presque Isle, offering free and reduced tuition for eligible Maine families, umpi.edu.
We've heard the Me Too movement loud and clear. Now, how do we transform awareness into meaningful change? Join WNYC for a national conversation where we explore how to ignite workplace culture shifts, punishments that fit the crimes, and greater responsibility from men. Beyond Me Too, women, men, power, and change.
Coming up shortly at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public has two summer positions for college or technical school students interested in careers in the news, journalism, digital news, and/or technical broadcasting fields. Candidates should preferably be attending an institution based in Maine or must have an existing connection to the state of Maine. Application deadline is coming right up, January 29th. For more information, visit mainepublic.org and click on About and then Careers, or contact the Human Resources Department at 207-330-4506.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, our tech team is here to answer your computer and other technology questions. In the studio with me, Andrew Rosenstein, owner of TechPort, Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology, and Janet McKenney, director of library development for the Maine State Library. Give us a call. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. And don't forget, email us a smart speaker command and you will be entered to win an Amazon Echo Dot. Email talk@mainepublic.org, and at 9 o'clock tonight after the rebroadcast, we will randomly select a winner. What would you like your Amazon Echo Dot to respond to? I believe you can already say playing Maine Calling. So, you can still suggest that. That would be a good one. I will go to an email from Lynn. She writes, I did not get any new devices this year. I'm just struggling with the ones I already have. My problem is a Chromecast device operated from my iPad, which suddenly quit working. I still get the wonderful Google images on the TV screen, but the Chromecast icon no longer appears on the iPad screen when I launch Netflix. I have disconnected everything, all four connections between the TV and the electrical outlet, and then reconnected, but it doesn't make any difference. Other ideas? Janet?
Yeah, I might delete the app and reinstall it. You know, to me, that would be, you know, the first thing that I would do. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Andrew's nodding. Yes.
That's what he would do too.
That's what I would do too.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. And actually, that's often a good answer, right?
Yeah.
It's a secret to what we do.
Isn't the first answer turn it off and turn it back?
Turn it off, turn it on, uninstall, reinstall.
Uninstall, reinstall. Yeah.
Just solved 85% of all of your problems.
Okay. And turn it off, wait a few beats and turn it back
30
on.
30 seconds is a good round number.
Okay. Okay. We'll go to Sam calling for Booth Bay. Hi, Sam. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks very much. I saw a brief news clip the other day about a person who had set up a facility, I believe it was in Washington State, to do Bitcoin mining. My question is, what is Bitcoin mining?
That's very dangerous. Very dangerous.
mining Bitcoin comes down to, don't really think of Bitcoin, but we talked about, again, the underlying technology is called blockchain. The idea of the blockchain is if I sent Andrew right now a transaction of a cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, as an example, there are miners, essentially computers, out in the world. Everything from one guy sitting at home with one computer to in China, their entire warehouses full of these things. And as Andrew alluded to earlier, what you're doing with cryptocurrency, it's called cryptocurrency because it's based on cryptography. You are the, when I process a transaction, in order for that transaction essentially to be validated by the network, it's attached to a cryptographic mathematical equation. It's virtually, it's not impossible, but it's very hard to solve. It's very hard to fake or duplicate. And what will happen is these computers or miners around the world are essentially racing. Who can solve that mathematical equation first? That's why we talked about earlier the potential environmental harm of a Bitcoin. Well, how can a virtual currency harm the environment? Well, because people are running massive amounts of hardware, machines, running high-end processors and video cards to solve these equations. They are then paid for being the first to solve it, essentially in Bitcoin. That's how Bitcoins are created. The miners are paid to solve the equation. So if Janet here, her machine solves the equation first, she then puts that answer out to the network with the answer. It gets validated, and then essentially Janet, as the miner, is rewarded and paid in Bitcoin. That's how they're actually created. So the miners are validating the transactions on the network, and once enough have validated it, that's when it's then posted. We talked about that public ledger. Think of your checkbook. Completely public, every transaction ever done is validated and put into that ledger. Once it's in that ledger, and with Bitcoin, essentially, it's about 1 hour later, that's done. That is a done transaction in life. It's in the ledger. It can never be changed or altered, and is always a reference point for future transactions. So it's a little convoluted, but the miners are there to validate your transaction. Just like when you swipe your credit card, someone, a mechanism at Visa validates that you have the ability to pay for that.
And they validate these transactions in bundles of about 400. So as these are processed, the miners receive payment in Bitcoin. And that formula has been changing. It's been actually going down. What is it? It was 12 Bitcoin a while back, but it does change by half in periodically.
It gets harder and harder to mine. The 21 million Bitcoins we talk about are not actually all created yet. I think it's 2042 when this process will create the last one. And you had mentioned earlier, well, how do we know? That system can never, because of the cryptographic math associated with it and how it was set up, it can never create more than those 21 million of a Bitcoin. So just like there's only so much gold in the world and people put a value on that because it's finite, the same thing with Bitcoin. So
there you go, Sam.
I know that didn't make sense. And remember, go to YouTube. You can always
And Janet posted a great video on the Maine Calling Facebook page. Here's an email from Carrie. She writes, "Hello, my husband got me a Google speaker for Christmas, and I love it. I've tied my podcasts and Spotify to it and use it as my shopping list as I'm cooking and as a timer. He saw my enjoyment of it and got one for himself. The problem is, when I speak to mine, his listens too. And I'm wondering if my Spotify and podcasts are now tied to his, which will cause a conflict. Is it possible to set up two Google speakers as a his and hers?" Janet, do you know?
I'm not sure about the Google, but I would think it's the same way, and these guys might know, but Alexa, you can use a different name for. And so my guess is with the Google Home, there's an alternative that you can program into it. So do you guys know?
So you could have Alexa and Jane. One speaker would have one name and no?
They have a like list. There's a list
of
specific
three,
names.
Three different names, I think, for Alexa.
But I'm not sure about the Google Home. I'll have to Google it and find out.
I would think with the Google one, you could probably set up each one with a different Gmail account, with a different profile. Honestly, I have not set up a Google Home, but I know with our Amazon, essentially, my wife and I both have our different Amazon accounts tied to it, but I do have to ask it to switch to my profile. Like I could literally say, "Alexa, switch to the Jared profile," and then it would go back and forth. But If they're independent, you may be able to use your independent Gmail accounts to set them up and keep them completely separate.
Okay, we have a question that has nothing to do with smart speakers and nothing to do with Bitcoin. This is from Karen. One, is it possible to amplify my phone ringer so that I can hear it upstairs off the only phone line to the house downstairs supplied by the cable because Fairpoint does not provide here, and a second cable installation, a monthly bill is more than I want to pay? And then, is there a way to piggyback off that line and install another working landline myself elsewhere in the house?
Well, updating to the newest iOS and the latest operating system for your Mac, if you have a Mac, you can take phone calls in any room that's within your Wi-Fi area. So meaning if your phone rings, then you can be alerted on your, I mean, it does mean purchasing more devices, of course, but you can be alerted on your Apple Watch, or you can answer the call on your watch, you can answer the call on your Mac, and that's one way to sort of not have feel like you have to carry your phone around everywhere.
Okay. From Zach, and Andrew, this might be something you're interested in as well. Though you've mostly discussed the latest technologies, quite a few people in Maine still use dial-up and relatively slow DSL or satellite access. Many users aren't aware of these two free websites that will let them browse the internet much faster on slow connections. Bestlinks.win and kinstat.com. They don't have any advertising and have made my dial-up browser far faster and easier. Please consider telling your listeners about these sites. Is this something you're familiar with, bestlinks.com and kinstat, or bestlinks.win and kinstat.com? Any of you?
No, I haven't used them at all. I don't know much about them, but I do know that there are alternatives out there. Opera is one that's open source and much lighter.
How do those work?
Well, the software is developed by people who are not interested in a commercial enterprise, and they just want a free and open internet. And so it's bare bones, and it's light, it's easy to use, but I think also, it's worth giving it a try. Just be careful about your internet security, meaning don't start loading up a new unfamiliar browser with passwords.
Okay.
Like,
and Janet, you're nodding.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's a lighter piece of software, so things speed up, so it doesn't have all the, settings and I've used Opera many, many years ago, so I haven't used a recent version of it.
Tor is another one that's also, you can use a Tor browser, and people often use that to get around if they're using more advanced security, but a Tor browser will work at any point, and they're updated more frequently than Opera has been, and that also is a light, no ads approach as well.
Okay, Jared, we have a question from someone named Jared. There are two of you. With
that
the
happens.
Recent buzz around Bitcoin, it has sparked my interest in the blockchain technology movement. Is there another coin out there outside of Bitcoin that has caught your attention?
No.
Jared, you guys must
I'm
be
not
soulmates.
A financial advisor.
As well as doppelgangers.
every YouTube video on cryptocurrency starts with some guy saying or woman saying, I'm not a financial advisor. There's a lot out there. The big three are Bitcoin. The second one is called Ethereum. Ethereum is essentially just a blockchain technology that is built in a way so a company could essentially create their own application and kind of piggyback it. And then the third one is right now a company called Ripple, XRP. And their currency is essentially designed for banks. A lot of folks who believe in the cryptocurrency decentralized market actually don't like Ripple and XRP because they are centralized and they're built for the big bad banks. Me personally, I don't think the banks are going anywhere. They never have in the last 500 years, and I don't think they will. So that's one that I find of particular interest. But if anyone's ever looking at crypto, just look at the problem that they're trying to solve. What is the problem that their technology is going to solve? And do you think that's a problem? Look at the company, look at the team, look at what you think their opportunities are. And, it's just like any other investment or something you look at, buy in what you believe in. So,
Sarah asks a very simple question. Tape to CD, where can I get this done in Portland? And if you all know the answer for Bangor or Lewiston or Augusta, I'm sure there's someone out there who would appreciate it.
Well, at the Maine State Library, you can come to our up room, Unlimited Possibilities, and we have a way to transfer old technology to new technology. So you can.
That's great. Do you have to make an appointment?
I would make an appointment now because we don't always have the personnel there to train somebody how to do it and how to use the equipment. So, you know, if you call 287-5600 and say you want to talk to somebody about scheduling time in the up room, you can do that.
And is there a fee to use the up room?
No, this is a library.
So you can drive to Augusta and go to the up room and mm-hmm. spend the day?
Yes, yeah, you definitely can. You know, what we try to do is provide access to people, but we want to make sure that they're trained in the specific equipment that they're using. So if they want to use the 3D printer, make an appointment, learn how to use it, and then, you know, you can come in and you don't need a staff person there to help you. It's really interesting. People bring in old LPs and are trying to put them on DVD or even into MP3 format because they don't want to lose that. So there's tons of people that are transmitting, you know, VHS tapes to DVD, records to, you know, new stuff. And so we have that equipment in the upper room.
You know, you're just going to be bobbed now.
Well, that's a good thing.
No. It takes the time to transfer.
That's right.
It takes.
You can
so
read
if you
a
have
book. While you
30 hours of home video. It's yeah. going to take a while.
Yeah. There are services that you can send it out and do it. But it was one of the things that we did get a lot of calls about and why we put the technology in the up room.
If you can't make it to Augusta, we have folks call for this all the time. I usually just Google video. I see when she says tapes, maybe we're talking about VHS tapes. If we're talking about cassettes,
or audio cassettes.
Yeah, perhaps, but usually just a video transfer service. There's definitely some around Southern Maine and Portland.
All right. Well, we're almost out of time. What are you guys most excited about? What are you watching in the technology news? What are you waiting to hear about other than Andrew, the home?
Well, I think also streaming services have improved enormously in delivering better content. I mean, this Christmas, my family was happy to get an update to our Apple TV, and we've been enjoying how easy it is to watch what we want to watch. And there are lots of new services out there. Filmstruck is one if you love old movies, and they're out there.
Okay, well, that's the end of the conversation. You guys, it's so fun always to have you here. Thank you so much. The voice you just heard, Andrew Rosenstein, the owner of TechPort. Also here, Janet McKenney, Director of Library Development for the Maine State Library. And Andrew Rosenstein is the, Jared Maxfield is the owner of Necessary Technology. Sandra Harris ran the board today. Sam Dearin answered your calls. Past editions of Maine Calling are always at mainecalling.org. This show is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, The Dark Skies Movement in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.